therefore you also believe you were not able to influence the negotiations for the 445, the steps were being taken. But primarily because of age.
Admittedly, the Communist Party was able to build its trade union organization while we were underground or in jail. But I think that the real political recruitment to the NSSP took place in the period of the struggle against the British in the war years. Had we not gone through that phase, we may have had a much more flabby type of party member and party follower than we gained at that time. Secondly, I would say that the leadership itself matured in the period of this struggle. Had we not gone through that struggle, we would have had a little more flippant type of political leader at the helm of affairs.
And I think especially regarding men like Corby and NM,
yes, they would never have had the opportunity of overcoming the obstacles in the way of their political development deriving from their social environment. Corby in particular really came to understand Marxism, I would say, in the period of the war. It was in jail that he began to study Marx, and it was in the underground that he began to apply the concepts of Marxism to the understanding of reality, particularly in India. And even above this, I would say, the experience of participating in the Indian movement was a tremendously enriching experience. It was something which could never have been substituted by anything either previously or contemporaneously or following.
What particularly looking at from the Indian?
The real application of Marxist concepts to the investigation of phenomena with which so many of us were unfamiliar.
Now this is the CSP, is it?
No, we, the Bolshevik Leninist Party.
Like a new thing, no?
The new party we formed in India.
When was that?
We formed the BLP really in 1942.
And who were the leaders, the Indian leaders?
The Indian leaders were really very second-rate individuals. So there was a man called Shukla in Bombay, Chandravadan Shukla. He's out of politics today, merely a journalist. There was Kamlesh Banerjee in Calcutta, and Indra Sen. Kamlesh is a journalist without any politics, I think, today. Paris. Indra has dropped out of politics, and he is also a journalist. He's also very interesting, this relationship between journalism and Trotskyist politics. He's assistant editor of the Hindustan Standard in Calcutta. Then we had another man called Omkarnath Shastri, who was really a very peculiar type. We had a man called Purdy, I don't know whether you heard of him, a South African, who came to, sought to organize the Trotskyist movement in India in opposition to us.
Purdy?
Yes. He was opposed to us because he called us the plantation owners of Ceylon. But he was a man with a very graphic way of putting things. He described this man, Omkarnath Shastri, from the United Provinces, thus he said, only a desert like India could produce a cactus like this. And he was a real cactus.
So then the leadership was largely Sinhalese?
It was largely Sinhalese.
Who were they? Bernard?
No, Bernard was there, yes. Bernard, Leslie, Colvin, Philip.
So then how did the experience have been? Not the Indian people influencing you, but just the experience.
Yes, it was really our personal experience that was valuable. We thought to do an utterly romantic thing, to build a united united party, you know, for India and Ceylon, and at one time we included Burma also in this.
But, yes, especially with the language barrier, how do you...
Language barrier, but so many other barriers. Cultural, traditional.
And did you get much support in India?
Well, I would say that we did achieve one thing. We did promote a critical appraisal of communism from the Marxian standpoint in India. But we undermined the lasting value of that achievement by making it so completely ideological and Trotskyist and so on.
Just one small point with regard to the new sphere. Is it true that before the biggest case in 42, April was it?
Yes, April. April 9th, I think it was.
Before that, the main court had come out of jail on two occasions to attend party meetings?
Oh, yes. We used to take them out and go and put them back.
By morning?
Yes.
And you were involved in that?
Yes, I was also good. Yes.
What was Vernon's role?
Vernon at that time had taught discretion by Mr. Father Weller.
And got the candy.
He had got the candy. But we used Vernon.
How?
We used Vernon to distract the attention of the jailers, at which he was very good. He could take them on little escapades and so on.
You mean the other night? He
used to be candy. So he used to get hold of the jailer. We would say we would need the jailer to be away.
Where were they in jail?
They were in Kandy.
Oh, I see. So you would take them on a
street? Yeah, we would take them on a street.
On a street,
yes. We would do that.
But wasn't one jailer also a member of your party?
One was guards.
Oh.
We had several guards.
So it was with the complicity of many of the jailers?
Somewhere.
Did they expect you to both at one stage or the other, or was it some understanding that they would come back?
Well, I must say, they had the jail guards who knew about it had perfect confidence in us. Mm-hmm. So if we told them that we were not going to come back, then of course they would have believed that this was a serious business, and they would have thought of it in that light. But when we gave them the assurance that we would bring them back, they would know that.
This is quite laughable, isn't it? From the point of view of the British Raj, attending meetings which were meant to undermine the Raj, and then coming back to His Majesty's prison.
Not only that, we had a meeting with the Indian Congress to launch the BLPI, the preliminary meeting, in the underground here, with these people from jail.
And before it was for
jail, they were present at that time.
And the Indian people?
Yes, and the Indian people too.
In Kandy or in Colombo?
No, it used to be away from Kandy, because we had a place close to Kandy.
And where was this? It is not a secret.
No, it was somewhere in Kampala or something like that. It used to, we had a house there, which was fairly well defended then.
With arms?
Well, arms were also not lacking. But not on any large scale.
And so that's probably a warning.
Yes.
A careful sentence by that.
Yes.
And the final location, did the jail guard know they were not coming back?
Yes, they told us. We were completely fair by the people who trusted us.
And did the even after, did the British cotton on the fact that you and L.A.G. and Doris were behind the job? I know they arrested Vernon and some others.
Yes. Perhaps they didn't know that Doris was... So I was not known that she has been connected with all this.
So when did they realize... Didn't they send put a warrant on for your arrest later on?
No. But I went to India.
Oh, okay.
Rather than expose myself here. My house had been raided, but they found nothing. clever suspects, but they had no evidence against him.
But even before, from 1944,
Leslie
was never in
jail.
No.
He escaped.
How did he manage that?
Well, we had information that they were planning to arrest people, and then Leslie was given instructions not to get caught.
Yeah, but how did he manage to stay out of sight for so long? Presumably.
You see, at that time, the police was really very backward. And we were so far ahead of the police in organization that there was really very little danger.
But you mentioned the fact that they did try infiltration and...
Yes, but even then, they were pretty badly informed. Today, of course, it might be more difficult.
Go up on another tack, and the question of principle, and the contrast with the Indian nationalist movement, especially the Congress. One picture of the Congress of its austerity and its asceticness, and the fact that many lawyers, in the lawyer politicians, were asked to give up their practice in order to work full time for the party. And in Ceylon, one hasn't seen that, even in the Marxist party.
That is true. And I think this reflects, one, the lesser intensity of political conflict in Ceylon compared to that which existed in India. And therefore, perhaps the lack of as much seriousness in political endeavor and activity as one gets in India. So I think when you look at Ceylon politics, there is sometimes a comic element in it, you know. Now look at this coup that they attempted in
1952.
Can you imagine anything more fantastic? People trying to overthrow a government and then suddenly deciding to call it off and go to bed. Obviously, they were not aware of the seriousness of what they were seeking to do. Having known that they were organizing to overthrow a government, and that there had been a leak from a source in the inner circle of their own organization, they should surely have made a bid to fight them.
But they had never intended to shed blood, had they really? If possible.
Yes, in other words, this was also a game of cricket, too. Similarly, you think this fantastic allegation of a coup that is the...
On now.
The order is on now. It's too ridiculous for words. Now, in all major problems, there is always a pronounced streak of the fantastic or the comic or the light-minded that you can find.
Particularly with regard to electricity, I don't think that it has also been rent not merely by personal divisions, but by personal divisions caused by love affairs and adultery.
Yes, but I don't know if they have really brought about factional division in the party as a result. They played a part in the crystallization of attitudes of conflict. But then you get that in most political parties, don't you?
Yes, but aren't you lucky that the climate here, morally speaking, from the public point of view, hasn't been victorious.
Yes.
Because if it had, yes, you would have had a type of split which the Irish party had when Farnham had an affair with maybe O'Shea.
Yes, or alternatively, these things would not have taken place, realizing the great consequences that will follow. It is the very, the absence of heavy repression in our society that leads also to indulgence in this type of activity, isn't it? So I would say that in Ceylon, perhaps also because of the smallness of the scale on which we operate, for a man to become a professional revolutionary and to make it the business of a lifetime would not have been justified except in the case of just a handful of individuals. If you have the handful of professionals in the leadership, then I think that is as much as our society demanded. Now, I can't think of what a man like Colvin would have done if he had abandoned his law and become a party professional. To what could he have applied his energy? Because to apply your energies to some particular form of activity, you must have the feeling that it is worthwhile, don't you? That there are fruits, or that there will be fruits that are in a reasonable period of time.
But then you're missing your thoughts when you're saying that there are no fruits.
No, I'm not saying that there are no fruits. Okay? But the fruits are small in proportion to the fund of energy that was available. So I think if Colvin was to have become a professional, he could have done so in the context of India. And he would have found a lot of satisfaction in being a political professional in India. But in Ceylon, one does not get that same opportunity.
I wonder, is there a cultural explanation for this? In the sense that perhaps we, seniors in particular, ourselves as people in the south and west and center, are more materialistic than the rather ascetic Hindu and more self-indulgent.
Yes, but isn't there a strong ascetic element in our Sinhalese culture? The whole impact of Buddhism. In the village, for instance, especially among our women, there is a considerable ascetic strain in them. This institution of the Upasaka, it all testifies to ascetic values in our society. But I think the difference is that we do not have a starving peasantry with a burden or an overburden of affluent landlords, large landlords, in the same way as you find in India. In that sense, the feudal overgrowth in Ceylon is very small.
Coming back to a sort of another fact, you mentioned the split between Edmund and Philip in the warriors over what? Some route.
No, Edmund was the priest. He was the priest.
In the warriors?
Yes, he was the priest.
And in 45, where did he?
45, I think he split the priest. Because I was also the priest in the warriors. Colvin was the priest in the warriors.
No, the point was, isn't it correct to say that in 45, where one war was over, and they decided to form, when split occurred, it was on ideological question of joining up with the Indian party?
I think that was more the pretext
for
the split than anything else. The basic differences were personal.
Okay. I suspected as much.
The basic differences were personal.
But isn't it also correct to say that Philip said, what's the point of fighting Indians in India? It's better to fight against Ceylon.
Yes, I think that was a very realistic position. But The rest of the party also was only abstractly interested in fighting imperialism in India. They didn't do very much to subordinate the struggle in Ceylon to the Indian struggle. I was the only person with Selina and Anthony Pillay who remained in India.
Why did you choose to remain there?
I think that is also more personal than otherwise. You know, what I'm rationalizing about now, the feeling of not getting an adequate self-satisfaction, I would say, from professional political activity in Ceylon, was gradually overcoming me. I felt that, you know, I was more wasting my time than really putting it to good purpose. But whereas I didn't get that feeling in India.
But looking back, doesn't it seem as a sort of escapism?
I think it was, I think so. There was a certain amount of escapism.
What about Selina?
Well, in her case, I think her decisions were complicated by the breakup of a marriage and all that sort of thing.
It had already occurred.
It occurred during the war, yes.
And it would be correct to say, I suppose, that the greater number of supporters stayed with Philip and him
in 45. Except among the intelligentsia elements who had come into the party.
And the strife between 45 and 47, I presume you experienced a bit of it when you came here for a year.
Yes.
Would you say that while the party was trying to build up its proletarian support and to represent the worker, at the same time they consider these as a sort of popularity contest? And
it's
trying to win support by showing
religion. I wouldn't say that this was the basic attitude. Mm-hmm. Basically, they were militant. Mm-hmm. In fact, the militancy many times was unwise or prompted them to unwise decisions. Because they believe that the more militant the action on which you launch, the more rapidly you were bringing the approach of the revolution. But I think that there were people with a certain political or parliamentary political sense. In him particularly, I think, did not believe in working class action as such. He believed in working class action in the interest of his larger political perspective. And the trade union movement, I think, served that purpose.
I was wondering whether the strike weapon, almost a strike gimmick, I would say sometimes, was taken to the west too often.
I think it was, especially during the Bandarnaik period. But not because that was a means of winning popularity, but rather because that was a means of bringing down the government. That's how they looked at it.
And now in 47, really, according to history itself, they say that they were defeated and it was tried to generalize themselves.
Yes. But then, whether the strike was smashed up or not, the strike action brought political consciousness to the participants, and therefore form new links for the party.
Yes, but just as a thesis creates an antithesis, an action creates a reaction of an ethic, say in Bandarnaik's time, there was a reaction too.
Yes. Particularly in Bandarnaik's time, I think their tactics were mistaken.
According to this electrical history, a civil war, a so-called Danish Wheel Trainer, sent to jail, given death sentences. I was wondering why.
Well, that was, I think, the Kamkarwa case. Oh, you know, we were running a journal, a weekly paper, legally for the trade union. Now, I was editing that paper with another chap called Vaidyasekhar. Vaidyasekhar was the most undisciplined person, but a real tap-tapper. Now, we had an editorial on Leighton, Admiral Leighton. There we really went off the deep end. Now, this was a legally printed paper. So, the publisher of that paper was called before the court and he was given a 7-year sentence.
politically engineered on a fairly good economic base in the sense that it was a period of inflation?
I won't say it was politically engineered, but the warriors brought about one thing, a real eruption of trade unions. It was confined latterly to purely non-struggle activity, in the sense that they introduced labor legislation, conciliation, and so on. But the workers learned the value of trade unions. Now, once the repressive lid was lifted at the end of the war, the workers naturally were anxious to test out the limits to which they could take their trade union activity.
So it was also genuine trade union
movement.
Now, but has the LSC hopes of bringing the government down or discrediting the...
That was always there. The LSSP always believed that you could have a general strike. Then, of course,